Oh, we're back again. And Patrick Doyle brought in his guitar with him today. And we're talking about immigration. No, no. Actually, when I asked him what we're going to talk about, it sounded like it. But no, it's not that kind of a boundary. It's boundaries within ourselves. Am I right about that?
With other people.
Hey, it's good to see you. Patrick Doyle is here with us, of course, counselor par excellence. And he comes in and answers your questions and all the rest. And I'll tell you what, you can probably call in when something will spark your interest. Let me just throw out the number right now. 776-5368. Oddly enough, it's the same number that you were able to call Nisha about, all right? 776-5368. Good to see you, man.
Hey, good to be here.
How are things going?
Yeah, you know, things are going.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, I'll tell you that.
Oh, the weather has been off the hook. Yeah. I just love it.
I know. You can't blame the weather for something going wrong with your relationships, I don't think, at this point.
Well, there's always, you know, the opportunity to try.
You could, but we would see right through that ploy.
Yes.
Boundaries. What kind of boundaries are we talking about today?
Well, you know, in this life, we all have relationships, hopefully. And
be they good or bad or indifferent.
Be they good or bad, yeah. We all have them. And sometimes people will run us over. Take advantage of us.
Okay.
Use us. And oftentimes people want to know, how do I get someone like that to stop? And the answer would be to put up a boundary. And that's, you know, that term is used a lot, and I want to talk about really some sort of simple definitions of it. And also give some examples. One thing I want to state right off the get-go is, listen, here's the deal. You got a relationship with somebody, and they are running you over. There is no way to get them to stop that without somebody feeling some pain.
Oh.
So boundaries create pain. Pain is the tool God uses to change. Many people think because I set the boundary, everything should get better. But I'm here to tell you, 9 out of 10 times when you set a boundary, or 9 out of 9 times, when you set a boundary, the person is not going to accept it graciously because they're used to taking advantage of you. They're used to running you over. They're used to having their way in the relationship. And when you tell them in so many ways that's not going to happen anymore, they don't usually like it. And the risk you run when you set boundaries is to actually lose the relationship.
Hmm.
Because they may not accept the boundary, and if they don't accept the boundary, then the relationship won't really exist.
You know, I think probably you're talking about the person who allows himself, perhaps, to get run over. This is going to be a quantum change in their life to
Absolutely.
All of a sudden put the brakes on it and change
right.
it. And
right.
you know what else reminded me of? C.S. Lewis talked about pain.
Yes, he did.
And how that's such a learning tool as well. So, I mean, clearly the theory is all there. Now the question is putting it into action.
So here's a real typical situation. And by no means does this, you know, equate all situations, but I see this a lot. I have a wife in my office and a husband in my office. And the husband is a nice guy, got a good reputation in the community. He's quote unquote, and I use quotes on purpose, he's quote unquote a Christian. And the wife has their whole marriage been trying to please the guy, appease him, keep him happy. It hasn't worked. He's not very happy. And so he continues to do things that are selfish. And this scenario, by the way, could be switched around. It could be the woman doing it to the man. But more typically, I see it's male to female doing this. Because God made men to be initiators, and he made women to be responders. And so it's a natural byproduct for the abuse of those two skills, for the woman to want to nurture, the man to want to kind of run over.
Hmm.
So here's the deal. So the woman finally realizes that it's really damaging to her and her family, and she wants to do something about it. And so finally the pain is so great, she decides, I'm going to confront the issue. The problem is, a lot of times when we get into that pain, we're so hurt, so angry, that when we confront the issue, we do it with a bazooka. And then when the person is justified then in not responding because the way we approached it. So when you set boundaries, you really need to be able to have someone outside of the situation to talk to who can give you very real-time feedback and honest feedback about what it is they see in the relationship. And you can first, this is a scriptural principle, the first thing I do is I look at my own responsibility, my own actions in the relationship. Jesus said it very clearly. Take the log out of your own eye before you take the speck out of your brother's. He also said, hey, if you come to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, go make it right with your brother, then come back. It's the same principle in both analogies. You got to look at yourself. You got to deal with your own sin first. And what this does is when I deal with my own sin, now I'm much more clear, much more calm when I approach the other person, rather than approaching them in reaction, rather than being, you know, wanting to tear their head off or get revenge or all that stuff. I'm actually able to do it much more effectively because I've dealt with my own anger, my own hurt, my own sin. Okay? So if somebody wounds me and I get hurt by that and then I lash out, is my lashing out, you know, justified? No. My lashing out is not justified because they hurt me. It doesn't change the fact that their sin was sin and they hurt me, but, you know, subsequently my reaction isn't okay. Mm-hmm. And so what you have in relationships is people get into these cycles where one person hurts the other person reacts, then they hurt that person, and that person reacts, and then they hurt them. And so what happens is over a period of time, you get to a place where there's very little trust, very little hope that any conversation is going to amount to any sort of success. And what I find is a lot of folks can't have conversations, married couples particularly, can't have conversations about certain issues because as soon as the topic comes up, defenses go up, history is right in the middle of your face, you can't see past what's happened 18,000 times already. And so all it takes is one inflection, one word, one body language, you know, one subject, and boom, we're off down that same old path that we've been down 1,000 times before. And we get down there and we have the same old bad result, which is we're both really angry and nothing gets resolved. So one of the suggestions I have in helping you identify where if there is a need for a boundary, okay, is to do a couple things. One is, like I said, you need to find somebody else who you can trust who will be honest with you about you and about the situation from your perspective. Not going to somebody and saying, you know, that person, it starts with you. Because if you're in a good place, if you're in a place of peace, the boundary is much easier to set. It's not easy, but it's easier. So you need to get that feedback. Secondly, I would take some time to sit down and write about what it is that I see, feel in the relationship and want out of the relationship, and write it down. Here's why. When all that stuff's in my head, I can't make sense of it because it's all tangled and, you know, connected to all kinds of other things. So when I start to write it down, I start to get a whole nother perspective. And if I can take it, the stuff I've written, to that person that I trust and let them see it, then I can really start getting some clear feedback on it. And again, the whole idea is I have to be clear about where I'm coming from before I set a boundary and make a commitment to hold it. So the first deal is you got to look at what's going on with you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's something none of us really look forward to.
Yeah.
I don't usually wake up in the morning and go, hey, I can't wait to look at my own problems.
Right.
I'm usually waking up going,
as
hey,
it shows my problems because of how I have them because of me. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm really looking, you know, I think it's the human knee-jerk response is to find someone to blame.
Yeah.
You know, Adam did it. He's that woman you gave me.
Yeah.
God was like, no, pal, that's not going to work. So God never goes for that. So you got to look at your own self first. And then here's the deal. Once you get that clarity, it becomes very obvious what you need to do. Okay? Once you get that clarity about yourself, the boundary reveals itself. Oh, okay, I see. It's, you know, I have been allowing this person to treat me disrespectfully, hoping that they will love me. Oh, well, that's no way to do it. That's not going to work. I don't love somebody who's a doormat. Do you?
Mm.
I mean, how do you respect somebody who doesn't respect themselves?
Yeah.
It's hard to. And so, but the person's not conscious that's what's going on, nor is the other party. They just think they're in this bad situation because they don't get any outside input that's healthy. There's a key distinction, yeah. You know. A lot of people are willing to give you outside input, but it's not healthy. So the whole goal of a boundary is to bring about trust and respect and intimacy. It's not to destroy the relationship. However, if setting a boundary destroys a relationship, what does that say about the relationship?
Well, and that's what I was wondering. Once the boundaries are set like that, now you have to bring them to the other person who is what may be feeling as if he or she is blindsided because, mm-hmm. well, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. What strategy are you coming up, yeah. you know,
you're
to...
You're changing the rules.
And pointing it at me.
Right. Well, see, yeah. you know, when I set a boundary, it would be something like, you know, Steve, in our relationship, you know, you have spoken to me harshly on several occasions, and... You know, that's just not okay with me. That's not going to go down with me anymore.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know, and so...
I guess I was thinking something far more specific, but, you right. know, this is the opening thing, because, right. like, what? You've never talked to me like this before?
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's what I'm saying. That's why the first thing you have to do is look at what your motives are.
Okay.
You have to look at what your sin is and get that clear. So what you don't do is use a boundary as a blame shift. I've seen that a lot. You know, I'm setting a boundary. Well, actually, what you're doing is you're blaming the other person. First, you have to be repentant in your own sin. Then you have the strength and the courage. Remember, it's another one of my core beliefs, which is this. Shame always steals boldness. So if I'm full of shame because of my own sin, how am I going to have the boldness to set a boundary and stick to it?
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm going to give in. And holding a boundary is a very difficult thing because it goes against every fiber in my body generally. To cause someone else harm by not falling into the pattern that they've always fallen into. You know, most people who have struggled with this, it's like people who are raised to be appeasers who are always, and you, if you're out there, you probably know who you are. Your job your whole life from being a kid all the way through life was to make other people happy, to make sure that everything was okay with them, to, you know, be the one who brought about the peace, to be the one who did the extra effort, to be the one who took care of all the details. You're an appeaser. Okay, appeasers, you know, if they set a boundary, they feel like they're doing something colossally mean. They feel like they're so wrong. They should not be saying these mean things when really nothing they're doing is mean. They're just saying, I don't want you to hurt me anymore. That's not mean. That's actually the most loving thing that someone could say to me. Is that, man, you're hurting me. You need to stop. And what happens is we think that that's not okay because it disgruntles the other person. Well, look, scripturally speaking, God has disgruntled a couple people. I mean, you know, you look at Jesus' life, and he was forever confronting things.
Mm-hmm.
Moses said to be the most meek man on the face of the earth. What did his daily life as, you know, leader of the Israelites look like? Well, he sat in a tent and he decided arguments all day long to the point where they said, dude, you got to find some help here. Mm-hmm. You can't keep doing this. You could get Aaron in here and you go spend time, you know, glowing and stuff. You know, so all day long what Moses did was confront, deal with things, yet he was meek. I think that's a weird thing. We don't see it that way today in our culture. We seek meekness as the person who's mousy and, you know, not very strong and, you know, kind of a doormat. And that is not the biblical description of meekness. Meekness in the Bible is strength that's under control.
Well, and you're right. I mean, just look at TV when we see people who are judges on these TV shows.
Yeah.
I guess maybe after watching a few of those, I've mm-hmm. kind of come to an idea of saying, well, judges aren't what I thought they were. I thought they were the kind who would be reserved, taking in both sides, mm-hmm. making a judgment. Instead, you see them as almost active participants for the prosecution or the defense. And I'm looking at it saying, you know what, something's messed up here. But up until this moment, I haven't been able to put my finger on it. And now I think I have.
Well,
because I look at those
you.
And I'm thinking, Judge Hatchett, what are you doing? You know, do they pay you to plead yeah, their case?
Basically, they do because it's good TV.
See, and there's the difference. Mm-hmm. It may be great TV, but it's not
It's
good
not right.
advice.
Yeah. But yeah. you see, what happens is there's a very subtle message from that, which is that's how you handle conflict.
Yeah, get aggressive.
Yeah,
get in the face.
Exactly.
And who's ever loudest.
Yeah. Right. And so, you know, and that's not what I'm saying here. Because when I talk about this, when I say take a look at yourself first, this thing has to be done first from your own humility. The humility from your own repentance before you move into that other person's space, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're doing it in a reaction, are you doing it in anger, are you doing it in a vengeful way, you're not setting a boundary. Okay? A boundary is saying, I do not want this to happen. I'm not going to do that anymore. These things now are off limits for me. Okay? And I can give you example after example from, you know, ladies who have set boundaries with their husbands about their porn addiction, alcohol addiction, you know, to the point where they ask a guy to leave because he won't stop drinking. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, why? Why would you do that? Because the pain of separation may be the only thing that gets that guy to think, I got to do something about this. And I've seen it time and time again. The guy never goes to treatment till the wife says, you're out of here. Then all of a sudden he's in treatment.
Yeah.
You know, but the wife spent 20 years living with it, which wasn't necessary. If you just say, hey, this is not going to happen. I'm not going to live with a drunk. Get some help or get out.
Yeah.
That boundary is painful, but it's the pain that caused the change that restored the marriage. So, and this is akin to what I talked about a couple weeks ago or last week, I can't remember, which is Hebrews 12, God's discipline. He disciplines those he loves. He's going to confront your sin. He's going to convict you. That's a boundary.
Yeah.
God sets them all the time. God is the ultimate boundary setter. He put the boundaries on the water. He's got the boundaries on time and space, whatever. You know, he also spiritually has all the boundaries in place. He says, don't do this, do that. This is okay, this is not. Why? Because he doesn't want us to annihilate ourselves. God doesn't say it's wrong to ruin your party. God says it's wrong because he doesn't want you to destroy yourself.
Let me ask you this. The people who may be being told of the new scenario as it's laying out, the aggressive mm-hmm. individual, mm-hmm. I can imagine that their first reaction, of course, is, well, first of all, you're wrong,
right.
And we need to get back to where we were in our relationship with me
right.
telling you what to do.
Right.
So how does this come to a some sort of a – is there? Well, let me ask you this. Is there a quick – any kind of a quick kind of a scenario? Can we put this on fast pace and get it all fixed real fast?
No.
Because, I mean, I can almost see that this inevitably means there is going to be pain.
It's probably
in most cases. Yeah. Huh?
Well, every case.
So expected, huh?
Yeah, I've never been confronted with my behavior and felt good about it.
All right.
Not immediately.
But your reaction may not have been to try to say, hey, I don't like the way this apple cart's being upset.
Sure. I think everybody does. And like I said, you know, after 20 plus years in counseling, you know, telling somebody the truth who's in denial, I've never had somebody in denial when I told them the truth go, gee, thanks, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Usually it's...
Not even 1%.
No. Okay. Usually it's, shut up, I don't want to hear that. You're crazy. That's not true. I'm not that way.
Okay.
Some defense.
And then what happens?
And then what you have to do is be like a broken record.
Oh. Which, that's got to be tough then for the one who's probably in the meek mode to begin with.
That's why you need somebody. That's why you need somebody with some objectivity who can continue to help you do what we call reality testing. Because the person's going to try to bend you back into shape.
Right, right.
And you need to be able to go back and say, now, this is what they said and this is what they did. What am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to say, am I supposed to hold the boundary here? You need that input because internally you want to fold.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want to do, and you want to resolve the conflict. If I just give it up, they'll be all right. But the truth is, if you give it up, you're going to live in misery forever. Mm. If you go through the pain now, it's the old mechanics adage. You can pay me a little now,
yeah,
or you can pay me a lot later. You know, so in my estimation, doing the work now is way cheaper than living in misery the rest of your life. And so, you know, yeah, you know, I've said that to many of folk, you know, hey, there's like, we come up with a certain saying, you know, I do not want to live with an alcoholic. Please get some help.
Right.
And then every time the subject comes up, the person just says it like a broken record. I do not want to live like an alcoholic. Because if you get into the conversation, it's just going to turn nasty. It's just going to go bad. You just got to say, here's the deal, and that's, I'm not discussing it any further. I need you to do this. I'm not willing to continue in this way. And again, that's, you know, talking about somebody who's an alcoholic, that's an kind of an extreme example. There are many examples in relationships that are actually functional, mm-hmm. where boundaries need to be set so that intimacy can increase. Remember, this is all about increasing intimacy and developing a deeper, more healthy relationship. Boundaries are required for that. Here's the other thing. You cannot have a good, intimate relationship without conflict. Can't do it. Mm. It's not possible. Conflict is required to resolve issues to keep intimacy going. If you never have any conflict, you're not resolving any issues. You're going to tell me two human beings who are sinful people are going to live together and never have conflict. I don't know what planet that is, but I've never seen it. You're going to have conflict, so you best get about dealing with it instead of acting like it's not supposed to happen. It's healthy. Now, there is unhealthy conflict, but in a normal relationship, if there is such a thing, and in one that's, you know, relatively healthy, conflict is required for intimacy. I am a sinner. The person I'm with is a sinner. You know, we're going to sin. So we have to confront that, deal with it, get to the other side of it, and our intimacy grows instead of dissipates. And this is one of the things that I see happening all the time. Relationships don't grow. They drift. They drift. And this is what you see. You know, I've said it a bunch of times. When you go to Elmer's and you see the old couple sitting there.
I was just thinking of that, yeah.
And, you know, they're in their 80s and they can't stand the sight of each other. And they've been together 50 years. And you walk by the table and you can feel the tension. And they don't look at each other. They never say a word. And I'm thinking, yeah, you've been together 50 years. At least you could reminisce. You know, just reminisce about the fights or something, you know. But how do people get there? No one stands at the altar and says, here's to being miserable when I'm 80. No one does that. But it, over time, because we don't deal with stuff, because we let it go, because we take the easy road, that's where we end up. Because people are sinful. Check it out. It's true. Mm. If you don't believe me, just open your eyes. It's everywhere. And so it's not about whether or not sin's going to happen. It's what are we going to do with it? In a marriage, it's not about whether or not you have trouble. In a relationship, it's not whether or not you're going to have trouble. It's what are you going to do with the trouble? The scripture says the difference between a righteous man and a wicked man is though a righteous man falls seven times, he gets up. That's what you got to do. Get up. Keep going. Keep pushing forward. Keep going to God and asking him for strength. Keep going to God and asking him for conviction. Keep going to God and asking him for insight. You deal with you first. Then you'll be able to deal with your significant other, whoever that is, whether it be your child. And, you know, we haven't even gotten into the parent-child thing here.
Yeah.
But this is a big, big, big issue with parents and kids, particularly as we get into the teen years, because parents oftentimes don't make the transition from authority to helper. You know, when a kid's 18, he should not be under the authority of his parents. He should be making most of his decisions on his own in a safe environment. Through their teens, they should be getting more and more responsibility, failing more and more, so they can learn the lessons in a safe environment under the care of their loving parents who are there for them. You get outside of your parents' house, nobody cares like that. So if you don't learn the lesson now, what happens when they get out later? They go crazy. Or they completely fail in areas because they've never learned. It might be in their head. You might have told it to them. But like me, like you, like all of us, experience is the thing that really drives it home. You know, when you get your first, you know, speeding ticket, you realize, okay, or maybe your second or third or fourth, depends how many it takes.
Yeah.
But eventually, the pain of the consequences is what brings home the truth of what you've been taught. That's how it works. And so, I think we have kind of a misconception that pain isn't going to happen to us, or it shouldn't happen to us. Well, that's not a... And again, I'm not one who goes around looking for it. I don't want it. But hey, to have a good life, you're going to have to deal with some discomfort. You're going to have to deal with some difficulty, some conflict. No relationship is conflict-free. It's just not possible.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever had the strong personality of that relationship you're talking about come up and say, you know what, I have to make all these decisions and I don't want to, but this person is so meek and does anything I say that I just hate it because I know that I can't make all the right decisions. That right. ever happen at all?
Absolutely. See, that's the other side of it.
They're almost trapped in the aggressive mode even though they don't maybe want to be, right?
And that's definitely possible.
Hmm.
Because when you have somebody who's always rolling over, that's not healthy either. Because now the other person never gets any, you know, everything seems to be on them, which isn't healthy.
Right. They got to make all the decisions. They got to do everything.
Right.
It's just,
but you see, on the other side, what they need to be doing is with the other person is saying, you know what? You can't just keep rolling over. You have to stand up.
I bet a lot of people would love to have this as the relationship problem, but I can see it's just as bad,
It is. And I've seen it quite a bit. And I've seen it particularly in family relationships, not necessarily marriage, you know, relationships, but family relationships, where somebody always in the family has the role of rolling over. The family has to be able to say, that's not okay. You can't keep doing that because that's not going to work.
We always know that Joni will do it, so we don't have to.
Exactly.
She always...
So what
picks up after us or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So what the family does is inadvertently train the person to be a doormat.
Wow.
And you know, it's not their goal, but it's inadvertent.
Right. Yeah.
And so those are the kind of things that have to be dealt with. And that's not easy. But I'm telling you, please hear me on this. It is worth the effort in the long run. The scripture says that for those who have been trained by it, that is God's discipline, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace. And dude, that is the thing I'm after. Because I want some peace. And God says I can have some this side of heaven. I'm never going to have total peace. Not going to happen. This side of heaven in a sinful world. You know, there's going to be some aching going on the whole way. Okay, but God promises I'm going to be right there with you. I'm going to sustain you. I'm going to give you what you need. Not what you want. Because you don't know what you need.
Mm-hmm.
What you want is not always right for you. But I'm going to take care of you because I, God Almighty, the one who knows all things, who loves you more than you can even comprehend, I'm going to take care of you. And on that, I can put my trust and I can put my weight on that. It will hold me up. God is faithful. If you trust him, then you can set a boundary. But without an intimacy with him, probably not going to happen.
It's great. Patrick Doyle, hey, thanks for being with us, man.
You bet.
Now, if people have further questions, they want to consult with you?
Yeah, they can call me at my office at 301-5500.
All right. Patrick Doyle here on The Dove.
Thank you,
man.
You bet.